International issues are in the spotlight this week, from Iran being put on notice by the United States for testing a missile, to President Trump telling the Australian Prime Minister that a previous U.S. promise to take refugees from there was a dumb deal, and much more. We thought we would examine foreign policy issues and the Trump administration this hour and welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. It is coming up on 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, February 3rd. So what do you think is the biggest foreign policy issue facing the United States today? What questions or concerns do you have about the foreign affairs stories in the news this week? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Bruce Gentleson is our guest, a professor of public policy and political science at Duke University. His areas of expertise include U.S. foreign policy globally and, in particular, the Middle East. He was also the former senior advisor to the director of policy and planning at the State Department between 2009 and 2011. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. We have so many things to talk about. I'm just going to ask you just your general reaction to everything we're hearing this week. It's like there's something new every single day.
Yeah, things are definitely swirling around, and some people think it's a good thing. A lot of people think it's kind of chaotic. I think the concern now is not just that a new president is in office and things are changing and in transition, that always happens, but this president has taken moves that have intensified crises and conflicts that could go in a very dangerous direction, both with Iran, broadly with his executive order in the Muslim world, with China over in Asia, with Australia, with Mexico. So I can't say any of that is really a good thing.
Yeah. Well, let's try to break down many of these as we can, at least briefly. The U.S. put Iran on notice this week following the country's launch of a medium-range ballistic missile that kicked off a hostile exchange with the president insulting Tehran on Twitter, and a spokesman for the country's supreme leader saying that Iran would not be intimidated by threats from a, quote, unquote, an inexperienced person. The latest news is that the U.S. is poised to impose new sanctions on Iran, with the announcement possibly coming as early as today. What are you watching for in terms of the U.S.-Iran relationship?
Extremely dangerous. We have lots of tensions and conflicts with Iran. We've had them in Iraq. We have them in Syria. We have them with some Iranian support for terrorism. We and others in the international community achieved, I think, what I think is a very positive and important agreement with Iran to stop its effort to develop nuclear weapons. It's interesting always to note that even with all our tensions with Russia and China, we all work together on that, and that really says something. And to very much, it's sort of like this administration, the National Security Advisor, Mike Flynn, had a reputation for being super anti-Iran, and the president had made a lot of statements. It's kind of like they were looking for an issue on which to escalate. And the Iranian test of ballistic missile, is potentially a violation of the UN resolution. It requires the international community to do something about it. But to immediately, on Twitter, when you send out something in all caps, like President Trump did about on notice, that's really a big message. And this is not the way to handle these issues. It runs the risks of war. And that's not in the American interest, let alone the interests of others in the region.
Yeah. He also said all options are on the table. What does that mean?
I think they have this notion of you have more leverage if you intimidate the other side. We're seeing that with this, the National Security Advisor comes into a press conference and says they're on notice, all options are on the table, and he leaves. The president reiterates that in his Twitter. I think somehow they think that if you really threaten Iran, they're going to say uncle. It's not the way it works. And in fact, it feeds into those in Iran who there are still elements there that would be more than happy to have an escalation of tensions and even a conflict with the United States. And so the very notion that somehow if I threaten you a lot, you're going to let me get my way. That's not the way it works. It actually often, you know, as they say, blows up in your face.
Yeah. Has the White House shown any indication that it plans to change that nuclear deal made during the Obama administration?
During the campaign, Donald Trump said he was going to tear it up on the first day. He hasn't done that. His defense secretary, Jim Mattis, has said that while he didn't totally agree with the deal, he thought it was a mistake to just withdraw from it. Perhaps the defense secretary, who served in the region as a Marine general, is having some influence. I think what they're trying to do now is to provoke Iran into doing things that will give them an excuse to tear it up. And if they tear it up, it's not just between us and Iran. It's between Russia, China, Europe are all involved. And, you know, they would like to have a say in this because whether Iran has nuclear weapons affects them, too. So it kind of cascades into all these other relationships in a negative way.
Yeah. The headline this morning is that the U.S. is poised to impose new sanctions on Iran. Do you have any sense as to what these sanctions might entail?
You know, there's so many different sets of sanctions. Some were lifted with the nuclear deal, some weren't. They had to do with why they were imposed in the first place. Usually what happens now is you do what they call targeted sanctions, and you target them at the travel bans or financial holdings of key people in the government or the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, which is sort of the more radical element of the military. But, you know, they won't have much economic impact. The key issue really is investment and oil sales. And much of that, for much of the world, has been lifted. Boeing has been looking at a huge contract, which would produce a lot of jobs in the United States with Iran, and they're competing with Airbus in Europe. So the Trump administration is kind of running into tensions and contradictions between lots of its promises. And my sense is if they impose sanctions, Iran will just, you know, move up another ladder of escalation, and that's very dangerous.
Well, another issue on the international stage is President Trump's plan to move the embassy from the Middle East embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and we have a caller who is interested in talking about that. Chris and Ladysmith, good morning.
Oh, good morning. I was just interested in your guests' thoughts on that. It's a, you know, it's been a political and theological hotbed for a couple thousand years. I'm just curious what your guests might think about Trump's idea about moving the embassy there.
Yeah, I think it makes the hotbed get hotter, both in Jerusalem and in Israel and the Palestinian areas and in many other parts of the world. It's a very symbolic move, which is why no president, Republican or Democrat, not Ronald Reagan, not Jimmy Carter, not George W. Bush, not Barack Obama, or anybody, has done that. The status of Jerusalem is supposed to be negotiated as part of an ultimate peace deal between Israel and the Palestinians. You've had many Israeli retired former heads of the Mossad and the Shin Bet and the Israeli military, none of whom were exactly soft, say this would be a bad idea. It would be counterproductive, and it would make peace less likely. It would feed terrorism in Israel. It would hurt the United States. So all of the above, I think it would be a big mistake. We may eventually move the embassy, but it would be part of a deal, not doing it just on our own.
The White House yesterday warned Israel that new or expanded settlements in the West Bank may not be helpful in achieving Middle East peace, which is something the Trump administration would like to see. This seems to be a step away from what some Trump officials and the president's designated new ambassador to Israel had said earlier. What do you think is behind this change?
Yeah, it's very interesting, isn't it? It's a very a big change, and because the Trump administration had been saying and implying that it had a very different view of settlements, not just from Obama, but again, virtually all of his predecessors. Back in 1990-91, George H.W. Bush and his Secretary of State Jim Baker had a big conflict with Israel over the settlements and took a very tough stand on it. So it didn't just start with Obama. And the Israelis had already announced something like 5,000 or 6,000 new building permits to be issued, both for building within existing settlements, which is bad enough, but worse, starting new settlements. So then this statement comes out yesterday. I was in Washington yesterday, and people were wondering whether President Trump's meeting with King Abdullah of Jordan in the morning had affected that. It conceivably could have. He's a very important ally of the United States. I've actually met with him myself on two different occasions over the years. But I think that and Netanyahu, Prime Minister Netanyahu, comes on the 15th for his summit. So that's when we'll know this what this back and forth is on the embassy, on the settlements. But the main message, even if it's a shift in a direction that some people like me might prefer, it's a very chaotic policy. You can't, as president, you know, kind of say chocolate one day, vanilla another day. That just isn't the way you make policy. And so I think that's the thing people are taking out of it is.
And let me jump in, Professor Gentleson, as we have news next and we'll pick up after news. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about foreign policy issues in the news this week with our guest, Bruce Gentleson, a professor of public policy and political science at Duke University. His areas of expertise include U.S. foreign policy globally and, in particular, the Middle East. We're kind of going from issue to issue as we go along this morning, as there have been numerous issues in the news this week dealing with global relations and foreign policy. Gordon in Wisconsin Rapids has a question. Hi, Gordon.
Hey, good morning. Say, just a shout-out to the Badgers. They should have beat Duke in the national championship. Anyway, we got ripped on that one. But I got to tell you, I understand on the morning of the inauguration, President Obama tried to transfer $221 million to the Palestinians. And I guess since it was blocked by the Trump administration, but what's the significance of that, and why would anyone try to transfer that kind of money just before a new administration would go in? Isn't that kind of setting things on the wrong way for Trump?
So first of all, on the really important issue, my college roommate's son went to Madison, and he wouldn't talk to me for almost a year after that. So I get it.
Okay.
From an Israeli perspective, you know, I've worked a lot with Israeli military officials and others who've been in charge of security in the West Bank, and they strongly support providing aid to the Palestinians because it helps them build their own security services, which actually cooperate a lot with the Israelis. It helps them build their economy, which is an important part of stability. And that payment was not like an isolated one. We had been providing support to the Palestinians since the 1990s. I think what President Obama wanted to do was make sure he got that tranche of money in so that it didn't get further held up by a Trump administration. So it was actually consistent with policy. And there are parameters and constraints and oversight about how the money is spent. To not give the money would have been a big break with policy.
Yeah, and we had just before news, we were talking about this change in tune from the White House regarding expanded settlements in the West Bank, and you were finishing up your thoughts when I had to jump in. You thought it was perhaps a positive development that the White House was telling Israel that it should not expand settlements into the West Bank, that may not be helpful in achieving Middle East peace, but you thought it was troubling that we hear one thing one day and another thing the next day?
That's right. That's right. I mean, I think there's a sense of ready, fire, aim with a lot of their foreign policy. And that's of great concern because even in that statement, they said it may not be helpful for peace. Every other administration, again, Republican and Democrat, has said it will not be helpful. It is not helpful. So we won't really know what it means until next Wednesday, Thursday, when Prime Minister Netanyahu comes to the 15th, so it's a couple weeks, till he comes to Washington. So I was pleased to see it move a little bit away from a policy that I thought was not a good one. But what it tells us about how they're making foreign policy has got a whole lot of people around the world quite concerned.
Well, we'll get to some other issues in a moment, but the Senate this week confirmed former chair and chief executive officer of Exxon Mobil, Rex Tillerson, as Secretary of State. President Trump has vowed to put America first, and I'm wondering what general thoughts you have when it comes to new Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and what this is going to mean for us in terms of diplomatic relations.
Yeah, Mr. Tillerson would not be my first choice for Secretary of State, and there are particular issues about his relationship with Russia from his period as CEO of Exxon and getting the Order of Friendship from Vladimir Putin. But presidents are allowed to appoint their own people. I think that's why Democrats went along with this. And I think they're trying to distinguish between those with whom there's big questions of competence and any relevant experience or a deeply ideological view that's antithetical, like the environmental people, to what they're doing. And so I think that was probably the decision they really had to make. America first. Every president has put America first. The difference is that so far the Trump approach is, I want to put America first by, bashing other people, imposing the cost, antagonizing around the world. And again, as we talked about with Iran and as we've seen with China and others, when you do that to a country, whether they're big or small, powerful or not so powerful, they've got a counter strategy. And it's not the best way to, it may make for a good speech, but it doesn't really get you where you want to go, which is make America safer and more prosperous.
Well, let's move to Russia. U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., former North Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, made her first appearance at the U.N. Security Council. During that, she said that the U.S. continues to call for an immediate end to the Russian occupation of Crimea. She said, quote, Crimea is part of Ukraine. Our Crimea-related sanctions will remain in place until Russia returns control over the peninsula to Ukraine. Your reaction to, isn't that a different tone than President Trump has been signaling when it comes to Russia?
It is. It'd be great if they mean it. Sometimes there's strategies out there where, let's buy some time or let's appease some of our critics by having somebody who's not really at the center of decision-making, the U.N. ambassador, say something that's different than what other people are thinking. So it was interesting that Ambassador Haley said that. Maybe it's consistent. She was at the UN in her first speech there. She used this expression that we're going to take names, which is kind of like the hot notice. So I don't put too much weight on it as a significant shift in policy. I'd be the readout from President Trump and President Putin's call last Saturday, as reported in the press and different people that I've been speaking to, was he didn't even bring up Ukraine, which is a signal to Putin that it's not that important to him. So I think that tells us more where policy is than the U.N. ambassador's speech, unfortunately.
And let me correct myself. I misspoke and said North Carolina. The U.S. ambassador to the U.N. is the former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley. The U.S. Treasury Department yesterday adjusted sanctions on Russia, and there was a lot of talk that people were alarmed that the Trump administration was easing sanctions on Russia. But it turns out that these sanctions eased were in place by former President Barack Obama. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, it's another mixed signal coming, I think, is, what it means to ease them, how they're going to do it. It may help some Russian companies. Are they Russian companies that have economic relationships with the Trump Organization and others? I think reporters are working really hard to get a little bit more information on that. We don't even have a Treasury Secretary confirmed now, so it's hard to know exactly what that meant and to dissect all the bureaucraties. But it's going to take a firm stand by the United States. The biggest sanctions, frankly, from Europe, because they have much more economic exchange with Russia. And if they see the United States relaxing our sanctions, then it doesn't really feed the incentives for them to keep theirs.
Speaking of other European leaders, European Union leaders are meeting in Malta to discuss ways to reduce the flow of migrants across the Mediterranean Sea and to shore up unity in the face of upcoming Brexit negotiations. Maybe you can just give us again your general assessment of how European Union leaders are viewing their relationship with President Trump.
Sure. I mean, clearly the European Union has quite a full agenda of its own problems. I was actually in London in June giving some talks at different universities and think tanks on how domestic politics, how foreign policy was affecting our election, and it was 3 days after the Brexit vote. So, you know, I was sort of like, you tell me what's going on over here. But I think that between Trump's statements on NATO, one of his aides insulted the head of the EU, who used to be prime minister of Luxembourg, and said he'd be the nice mayor of a city in Luxembourg. I mean, you know, when you send these signals to, other than Canada, what are your closest allies in the world? And they did make a statement which probably went too far, but I think it was their concern that said, you know, the United States may now be as much, you know, as much of a threat to Europe as Russia is. There's a lot of concern there in so many ways, and I hope it doesn't distract them from their own issues, because that's really primary. But, you know, he insulted the Chancellor of Germany, said he trusted her about as much as he trusted Putin. It actually may help her get reelected. You know, you just can't be doing this to your friends when you want to work with your friends on the problems in the world.
Yeah, and speaking of friends, there are some in Great Britain who don't want Donald Trump visiting Great Britain. What's up with that?
A million or 2 million people have signed an online petition. You know, it's a strong expression of their views. You know, it's not going to block a visit. And again, I wouldn't support saying don't let him come. I think, you know, peaceful protests to express their views. Frankly, I think one of the most dramatic things would be for President Trump to meet with the mayor of London, who was elected last year and who is, you know, a British Muslim and had this amazing statement about identity. He said, you know, I am a Londoner, I'm a British citizen, my family's from Pakistan, I'm a Muslim, I'm a father, I'm a dad, I'm a, you know, a husband, a son. And the contrast between the two about their attitudes towards the world and the Muslim world would be a very powerful statement that the British could make if President Trump would be willing to actually meet with the mayor of London.
Here's an email from Ellen in Independence. I think the greatest concern really is the alternative facts, because unless we can regain trust in the information that we receive, we will continue to lose our freedoms, as in the EIU, that's the Economist Intelligence Unit, which pointed that out by downgrading the United States as a flawed democracy from a full democracy. So the EIU downgraded the United States as a flawed democracy from a full democracy. As parents of a child who has the desire to become a United States Marine Corps officer, we are very concerned with the move of Steve Bannon being placed at the top of our National Security Council. She had more to say, but I guess your reaction to that?
Yeah, I think, you know, this shows how what's happening affects people in their own personal and family lives, as well as, you know, political and professional. And Ben is not head of the council, but he was given a seat on the National Security Council that really is unprecedented. Many people, myself included, consider him a dangerous person. He, you know, has been one of those that's moved this fake news along, and this notion that, you know, facts are really what you choose them to be. I mean, there are things we can debate, but there are certain facts. And his views have really been those that have sowed, you know, an awful lot of hatred. You know, there's some evidence that even the statement issued by the White House on Holocaust Remembrance Day that the State Department had drafted, as it often does, to particularly emphasize the 6 million Jews that were killed, that was eliminated. There was no reference to Jews or just to people that died in the Holocaust, and that Bannon seems to have done that. So he is a person of really great concern, because I think he really is, his views are views that are not good for our country in terms of our core values, let alone our foreign policy.
1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. If you have some thoughts or concerns about U.S. foreign policy and the Trump administration, what do you think about President Trump's relationship with other world leaders and other issues involving international relations? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Let's move to President Trump's relationships with some other world leaders. He had a very tense conversation with the Prime Minister of Australia this week, during which he reportedly said a deal between the two nations on refugee resettlement was dumb. Trump later said he would respect the deal, though he wasn't happy about it. He was going to look at it. He said that this is an example of countries taking advantage of the United States. What's your reaction to this incident?
Yeah, you know, combined with his actually hanging up on the Prime Minister after 25 minutes, what was supposed to be an hour call, you know, it's just a lot of outrage. I spent about 6 weeks at Australian National University a couple of years ago, and in Canberra, their capital, there's their war memorial. And you go to that war memorial, and you see how many wars the Australians have fought with us to help us, even when they didn't necessarily totally agree with the policy. So to do this, both the specific issue of the refugee agreement, that's not, they have their own issues, and their country has its own debates about refugees and asylum seekers. But 1,250 accepted was part of an exchange that, you know, that each country was helping the other. And to treat a leader like this, it just sends a message to everybody that at a personal level is insulting, and at a policy level is very worrisome.
And there is meetings going on. John McCain was pledging the U.S. support, and the ambassador to Australia and Australia's ambassador to the U.S. are meeting to smooth things over today.
Yeah, and John McCain was kind of backfilling for, you know, because of his own commitment to American security. John McCain also is one of the few people on the Republican side on the Hill that's taking seriously a real investigation into the Russian hacking of the election. The Republican leader is trying to slough this off as just a minor thing. And I think it's something that should be of huge concern to Americans for any number of reasons. And I give Senator McCain credit for trying to take this seriously, because it's not just about Trump and Hillary Clinton. It's really about the fundamentals of our political system. But many people want to just kind of pretend that it wasn't so bad and make it go away.
And I'm pretty sure he once again insulted Mexico's president, said something about the bad hombres that Mexico has down there.
Yeah, so there are different reports. The Associated Press reported that he said, you know, if you don't work with me, I'm going to send some troops in to get those bad hombres, you know, kind of like General Pershing chasing Pancho Villa back around 1916. This is just wild stuff that, you know, no official, even a mid-level White House official, shouldn't be saying, let alone the President of the United States. It's the kind of things that are so provocative and run such risks that, you know, you just have to be concerned about what's going to happen next.
We have Matt emailing, Donald Trump's foreign policy should come with ready explanations for when Americans travel abroad. Nearly everyone I've met overseas since the Trump era is dumbfounded. Many of them know more about American politics than Americans. It's embarrassing and difficult to explain his rise to power. Well, we have to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about foreign policy news this week and foreign policy under a Trump administration with our guest, Bruce Gentleson, a professor of public policy and political science at Duke University. And we'll welcome your questions, your concerns, the story that has you scratching your head, maybe, or maybe you want to support what President Trump is doing. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. We'll check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network. It's going to be mostly sunny today and cold, with highs in the upper teens, but wind chill readings below zero into mid-morning, mainly north of Madison and Milwaukee. Coming up in our next hour, it's the Week in Review. We'll have two guests from different perspectives talking about all the top stories in the news this week. That's coming up in our Week in Review in our next hour. We are discussing foreign policy and the Trump administration during this hour and the many stories in the news this week that have put international issues in the spotlight. And we're welcoming your questions and thoughts on where we're headed. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Talking with Bruce Gentleson, a professor of public policy and political science at Duke University, and his areas of expertise include U.S. foreign policy globally. We have full lines, so let's take a call from Milan in Milwaukee. Good morning.
It is a good morning, and thank you. I am generally a supporter of Donald Trump and his activities, and particularly with the Australian government. We have thousands of refugees coming here under Obama's proposal from Australia that were not allowed in Australia because, in fact, they were economic refugees who paid to be smuggled in. And they were placed on a small island and did not pass security background for Australia. Unfortunately, we are going to have to accept them, but as our president said, this was a horrible deal. Australia is essentially paying us for taking them.
Yeah, so the president did say something about we're going to be taking in the next Boston bombers or something along those lines, Professor Gentleson.
Yeah, I just say a couple of things. One is it's not thousands, it's 1,250. Second, it's part of actually a swap. The Australians are agreeing to take some Central American refugees that might otherwise be headed to the United States. So I'm not sure if the numbers are exactly equal, but they're close. And thirdly, nobody gets in this country without full vetting. It's not like they're going to get on a plane from Australia and land at Kennedy Airport and just go through. So, you know, I don't think those concerns, I understand them, but I don't think they're problems. I think the deal made sense for both countries and still does.
Let's go to Doug now in Stevens Point. Hi, Doug.
Hi. Sorry, I have a lot of things to say. One, I don't think Donald Trump is a legitimate president. I think that he got in through hacking means. I think that he is extremely dangerous to the future of our country as a whole on the global scale. I don't know if he's doing the things he's doing out of ignorance or if he's purposefully making things worse for us. But if we're looking at the world from a global standpoint, we should be looking at working cooperatively. Now, understandably, we were at the top of the food chain, and now we're looking at things globally, so our part has to kind of settle down as other parts come up, so maybe we won't get the best deals in a lot of situations. But we still should be looking at cooperative behavior, not this isolationist view that's going to take us backwards and put us at odds with everyone, including our allies. I think that's extremely dangerous, not only now, but continuing into the future. Steve Bannon is a horrible person, in my opinion.
And you know what, Doug, I know you have a lot to say, but we have limited time, and you've given us quite a bit to talk about. How, in your analysis, Professor Gentleson, how dangerous is the isolationist type of foreign policy attitude of President Trump?
Yeah, I think he not just wants to come home like an isolationist. He wants to, you know, push back and impose burdens and costs on others around the world. And it's kind of like this strategy of every president has to figure out how to use American power and leverage and influence. And we do have power. His is sort of a strategy of intimidation. You know, if I threaten you, do bad things to you, you're going to say uncle. And it's interesting, you know, in his experience in the business world, his so-called art of the deal, you know, that may have worked with small family contractors building cabinets for casinos in Atlantic City, where he could say, I'm either not going to pay you or sue you. They didn't have they didn't have their own recourse. But again, every country in the world has a strategy it can push back on. Mexico does, China does, Australia does, etc. And so I think this strategy of intimidation, it's not just that it feels bad, you know, from a moral point of view, it's counterproductive from a pragmatic point of view, and it really is very dangerous.
President Trump made an unannounced trip this week to honor the returning remains of a U.S. Navy SEAL that was killed in a raid in Yemen, a weekend raid in Yemen. The president was expected to meet with Chief Special Warfare Operator William Ryan Owens's family, which requested the visit, and the dignified transfer of the Navy SEALs remains in private. A lot of President Trump supporters are pointing to this, showing that this is this shows how much President Trump supports the military and military families. Your thoughts on this?
I give him credit for doing that. We're asking our military to do so much around the world. You know, even when they come back without injury or being killed, their families suffer tremendously from, you know, repeated deployments to Iraq, Afghanistan, many other places. And, you know, I've got great respect and many friends and colleagues in the military. So any way of showing respect for the military, you know, I think presidents should do and deserve credit for. Mm.
There is some talk, though, now that this Yemen raid, which had started under the Obama administration, may not have been. At least some are questioning whether it was ready to be executed. Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, that's true, too. According to the reports we're seeing from the press, talking to people in the White House, is rather than do what you should do, is sit down in the Situation Room with all your advisors, hear the recommendation, hear the risks, here's the pros, here's the cons. He decided this at the dinner table with his 35-year-old son-in-law. Defense Secretary was there making a presentation, I think the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, too. But, you know, you really have to, for the same reason you were talking about before, respect for the lives of those who provide service. You really have to think these things through and not make these kind of decisions in that kind of way. And so that's another cause for concern about the way that he approaches complex decisions. Often, if you approach it that way, you're usually not going to get as good a decision as if you had a better process.
Yeah. Only a minute to go, and one other big issue that's in the news this week is Secretary of Defense James Mattis is visiting South Korea and Japan and reassuring them that their bond with the U.S. remains strong. Mattis also delivered a warning to North Korea, saying that any use of nuclear weapons by the North on the U.S. or its allies would be met with an effective and overwhelming response. North Korea, once again, you know, talking about testing nuclear missiles. How big of a threat is North Korea, and what do you think of the U.S. response?
North Korea is a huge threat. It's probably at the height of unpredictable countries and leaders in the world. I think Secretary Mattis was trying to reassure our allies, including you know, trying to temper statements the president has made about what we would do to help South Korea or Japan. I know Secretary Mattis. We've spent time together. He's a real professional. We don't agree on every issue, but I have great respect for him as a professional. And so his mission has been to reassure allies. He called the Europeans. He's in Japan and South Korea. He's trying to reassure them amidst their worries about what the president is doing and saying.
Mm. Well, so what are you watching for now?
Duke basketball.
Okay. Got to have a break, huh?
Yeah, no, I think the Iran thing is probably, you know, there's a lot going on with China, but right now I think the Iran thing is in a very dangerous situation, and you know, it could really lead in bad directions in which we stumble into something that that could make a difficult situation even worse. So that's probably the highest on my list right now.
Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Good talking with you.
Bruce Gentleton, professor of public policy and political science at Duke University. Wisconsin is a state that regularly receives refugees from some of the countries listed in the president's executive order on immigration. According to State Department numbers, 1,877 refugees from nearly 20 different nations settled in the state in 2016 alone. As Alexandra Hall reports, groups that help those refugees find places like housing and jobs now face uncertainty.
At Istanbul Market, in a small strip mall on Madison's west side, the shelves are stocked with items you might have trouble finding in a standard American grocery store. Turkish candy, henna, and dried molokhia, greens used for cooking meat in Syria. Abdul and Rula, Syrian refugees who have been in the U.S. just over a week, are here shopping for spices. We're using their first names only to protect them. They speak through an interpreter.
Alhamdulillah,
she said, thanks God, she feels better.
Sure, yeah, it's very good. She's very happy to be here. He said, I want to say thank you to the American government for welcoming us.
The couple and their two young daughters fled Syria in 2012 and lived in Jordan for about 4 years before being approved to come to the U.S. with help from Jewish Social Services. That's a nonprofit that, among other things, helps refugees settle in Dane County. Abdul and Rula arrived on a significant date, Inauguration Day, just 1 week before President Trump signed an executive order that would have stopped them from coming indefinitely had they delayed their trip just a few days. The way Rula sees it, they were the lucky ones.
It's very painful for her when she thinks about the other people who have the big hope to come here for a better future and better education for them and for their kids.
Istanbul Market owner Yashar Tyrov came to the U.S. from Russia as a refugee himself over 10 years ago. When he hears Abdul was a chef and butcher in Syria, he excitedly puts him to the test. Cut your own meat and we'll see about giving you a job. Abdul meticulously chops thick cubes of red beef and folds them into pockets of plastic wrap. It's clear he knows what he's doing, and Yashar is impressed.
No, he don't forget. He's good. Don't forget, yeah.
The two don't even speak the same language. Instead, they communicate through hand gestures and a muttered word here and there. But Yashar says he knows what Abdul wants just by looking at him. Abdul is beaming.
So I feel him. Like I come to America, I feel the same thing. He won't work any job. We give him any job, he's going to work. He's going to be happy for any money. Just happy to work in America, his life, family life.
The program that brought Abdul and Rula to Madison is a relatively new one. They are the third family Jewish Social Services has assisted with coming to Dane County.
My name is Becca Schwartz, and I am the resettlement coordinator for JSS, Jewish Social Services.
Becca says before news broke of the executive order, JSS had plans to bring three more families soon, two from Syria and one from Eritrea.
It's really frustrating because we are trying to do some important work. It makes me worry for the safety and security of the people who we would have been settling here.
Emin Bujunashvili is also shopping at the store today. The business owner and refugee from Azerbaijan says people should give Trump a chance.
Basically, what I understand about Trump, I see him, what he's doing and just clean this United States from foreign bad people coming in, make sure in this country, good people.
Next to the entrance, ads for piano lessons and a keyboard for sale are tacked to a refrigerator. And something new, a notice from a local law firm cautions Muslim shoppers not to travel outside of the U.S. until they've spoken to a lawyer. Alex Hall, Wisconsin Public Radio.
This story was produced in collaboration with the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. Thanks to Brianne Chasso for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.